You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy, and you're listening to my podcast, Vox and Hops, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with my fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. Hope you guys had a wonderful weekend. I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday season. I am stoked to be back. This episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is one of Montreal's premier metal promoters. Not only do they put on a bunch of sick shows all year long when there isn't a global pandemic, but they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals. And trust me when I say this, it's the absolute truth, because I have played just about every metal festival out there, and Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. I'm super, super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops podcast. On today's episode, I am with James Monteef of Tesseract. Here it is. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 218.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today I'm with James Monteef of Tesseract, and I am super, super stoked to be with you because you are a very, very cool metal and craft beer person, and it surprises me that I haven't had you on the podcast sooner because you're a very perfect guest. So let's start with a very, very simple yet complex question. How have you been coping with 2020?
Well, it's been, to be fair, I think that it's been bearable for me, kind of more so than many. I was really lucky that in terms of the band, we were going to have a very quiet year this year anyway, so it hasn't really affected what we're doing all that much. And I've been lucky that I've been able to still do my job and that sort of thing. So in a way, I count myself really, really lucky that, I mean, obviously this year sucks, as it sucks for everybody, but I feel like it sucks less for me than other people that had a really terrible time. Like, talking to some people I know that, you know, road crew people who are like basically just scraping by, doing whatever they can to survive. I mean, my heart goes out to basically everybody in the events industry and that's those sort of worlds who basically have been totally screwed by this year. So yeah, I count myself lucky. So yeah, I've been relatively, compared to the rest of the world, doing okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. And
how about you?
I'm hustling along, just pushing along. Likewise with Cryptopsy, we were in a writing process year, so we had very, very minimal gigs canceled. Actually, only one, to be honest, so we were very, very lucky in that aspect of everything, and it's given us some time to write, which we needed. So that's going well. And the podcast, I've had a chance to chat with a bunch of people such as yourself, where I love to sit down with my metal friends and talk about their life, metal and craft beer. So what beer do you have on your side there, James, that we're going to virtually share today?
Oh, well, right now I'm drinking Faith by Northern Monk, which is a UK brewery based up in Leeds. And it's a hazy pale ale, which
is
a British version of a New England style beer, I guess.
Have they tackled it yet? Do they got it down?
Yeah, this is really good. It's really delicious. I'm a big fan of this one.
Very, very cool. I have two beers here, and I'm going to let you choose which beer I'm going to drink. I have, first up, the Vox and Overhops, which is the Vox and Hops collaborative brew with Overhop Canada. It is a double dry hop New England IPA with Vic Secret, Enigma, and Citra hops, 7% ABV. This is option A. And option B is the brand new Cryptopsy, the Cryptopsy collab with Kanawake Brewing Company. This is Pilsner Supremacy, a New World Pilsner. It's a crispy boy that's been double dry hop with Mosaic hops. So which one should I drink today?
Well, I think you have to go for the Cryptopsy.
Beautiful.
I think that sounds delicious.
It's really, really very, very cool. And from having spoken to Drew, their brewer, who I've had on the podcast before, he might just keep doing it. So that makes me, I'm going to switch up hats because I'm switching the beers. I wasn't sure. I'm always prepared. I love when breweries send me hats. So I'm going to crack this Cryptopsy. And I want you to tell me about your very first brew. Do you remember the first beer that you ever drank?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be classy. It's going to be... to be honest, I think the first beer that I have an actual memory of, probably when I was like sort of a teenager or a late teenager, was probably drinking bitter, which is, you know, a traditional British beer. which is served at cellar temperature. Well, all ales, all traditional British ales are served at cellar temperature. I say room temperature normally, but then it's only occurred to me that people in warmer countries, actually maybe not in Canada, but other warmer countries, they go, oh, gross. you don't want a hot beer. But yeah, it's basically just a very mild flavour, very lightly hopped, quite brown in appearance. Yeah, I wasn't that into it. Although to be fair, over the years I really grew to love it, and I love a bitter now. But I guess at the same time, European lagers were a staple of my sort of late teens, early 20s drinking, because they're readily available and very cheap. And I never had a passion for it though. I never really got into. I drank beer for, let's admit it, the alcohol for when I was younger. But if I'm honest, the first time I really discovered beer that's amazing was the first time I toured the States, actually.
Really?
Which was about a decade ago now. And I remember a friend of our band, a longtime friend called Diana, who lives in LA, she took us out to basically some craft beer places. And it was my first ever experience tasting the American style IPA. And also lots of American style Belgian beers. I mean, basic stuff like Blue Moon and things like that, which there was a whole new experience. I was like, wow, beer is actually something more than just something you get drunk from. And it was from that point onwards, I started to really get much more into beer, mainly because of, I guess, about 10 years ago is when the American microbrewing kind of thing was really kicking off. And I got really into it. Doesn't mean I know anything. I'm absolutely not nowhere near an expert, but I've enjoyed sampling and loads of stuff. And so I guess, yeah, there are three different periods of my life. My first beer that I ever drank, and then the first time I drank beer, and I was like, wow, this is something awesome.
Very cool. But you went on to do some really cool things with beer too. Terrorizer asked you to, I think it's a brilliant thing because it's very, very smart to do a guide to the U.S. craft beer a few years ago. Talk to me about that and how that went down, how that was organized, and the brilliant idea of getting free beer.
I think that was it 2014 or 2015. I think it was when we were on the Sonder tour, and they were going out with the Contortionist and a few others, Sky Harbor, Era. Yeah, God, my memory is terrible. It's come back. So I think it was like a fourth tour. And so by then I've been really getting into craft beers, especially American ones. And I remember the first day we got there, we played the first show, and our buyout was particularly small because there was a big package and I guess the catering budget wasn't very big. And we ended up cutting the rider, and basically we had like no beer. Which, to be fair, if it's beer on a rider, it's usually PBR or Bud Light, so it's not special. But we had literally nothing, so I was like, oh, shit, what am I going to do? Like, this is going to get really expensive really quickly if I'm drinking in bars. So I thought, well, I know. Let's see if people bring beer in exchange for guest list, and I'll review it. And it was a massive success. The amount of beer that got brought down to the shows was incredible. Like way more than we could possibly drink. One thing that I also learned very much about Americans is they're all very, very proud of their local produce.
That's correct.
So literally you'd get like three or four people turning up with a case of beer each saying, yeah, this is the greatest beer you'll ever drink. We're like, okay. To be fair, we drank it, we enjoyed it, I reviewed it. And that started to become a tradition. Every US tour, I've done a beer blog. I don't know if I did one on our last one, actually. In fact, I didn't. I don't know why. I think I was tired. but for about three or four tours, we did it. And it was also really nice because I got to actually just, you know, as a way to hang out with, meet fans of the band and have, I guess, something in common to talk about. So I just go and hang out with people and talk about beer and we'd drink beer. And so it was a nice sociable thing to do as well.
Absolutely.
Tried some crazy beers. I do like a range of beers. I mean, yeah, I love sours, I love stouts, I love IPAs. I love double IPAs. They're really delicious. But I can't really get on board with loads of the really creative ones that come out of the state. And loads of really green tea beer. I can't remember who made that, but that was disgusting.
Well, I definitely owe you a massive props, because your driver on that tour, or on one of those tours, was Donnie Hill.
Oh, Donnie Hill, yeah.
Donnie Hill drove Cryptopsy a few years ago, and he was, I had just started the podcast, and he's like, you know what you should do? You should offer guest lists in exchange for craft beer. Tesseract did it. James did it. And you should do it, too. So I started doing that. And you're 100% right. I got massive amounts of beer at every show. It was just insane. So much fun. And it is. It's that extra little social thing when you're having a chat with someone, especially sometimes, you know, speaking to an artist can be intimidating. But if you're coming there and you're talking about beer, it's something that brings us down on the same level. So they open up to us, but we open up to them a little bit more too. So I owe you a huge cheers and thank you for that. This Cryptopsy is delicious. It's got hints of melon on the nose. It's got like that beautiful mosaic profile. It's got that bohemian yeast, and it finishes super cereal, super malty, crisp, delicious. I want to also talk about the very first time I ever saw Tesseract. I actually opened a gig here in Montreal when I was playing in a different band called The Catalyst for a short period of time, and you guys were playing with Devin Townsend Project. This is probably one of your first tours, I think.
That was the very, very first tour. That was 2010.
Really? Exactly. Yeah. November. It was November 2010. Exactly.
Yeah, first US Canada. Cafe Campus, yeah, I remember that.
Exactly, upstairs, the small room. And I remember watching you guys take the stage that night, and I was like, who is this fucking band? And I went home, and I immediately just downloaded. You had only had the EP out at the time.
Yeah.
Immediately hooked. I've listened to it countless times since then, so it's very, very cool to be with you. And let's talk a little bit about Montreal. Subsequently, you guys have come through a bunch of times. What is your experience playing Montreal?
It's always good. Like, the crowd's always really crazy enthusiastic. And culturally, it's obviously very, very interesting as well, because obviously it's very French, which, to be honest, it's quite funny, because when you tour the States and Canada together, quite often a lot of the States is very samey. Sorry, America, I don't mean to be mean. But, you know, like, when you travel around Europe, yeah, you're in Italy one day, then you're in Spain, then you're in France, then you're in Germany, and basically different language, different cultures and everything. But when you tour the States, it is, you know, everyone speaks English. Obviously each state is kind of different, but it's not like different countries. Whereas when you go to Montreal, it's almost like going to, if you go from Toronto to Montreal, it is like you're going to a different country. Like, everything's different. The architecture's different. The people look different. The vibe is different. And it's exciting. I remember every time we go there, it's really, really an exciting place. And, my first ever real memory was the guys in Devin Townsend, when we went to Montreal, they took us for poutine.
Of course they did. Did you make the mistake? Did you eat it before the show?
I didn't. No, we went afterwards.
That's always the right decision. A lot of musicians go in there and they hammer out a poutine before their gig, and then they just suffer the whole show.
It's a good post five beers snack.
Exactly.
Well, I remember one of the last times I was there, we went to a place that did posh poutines. It was almost like gourmet poutine.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting experience, but yeah, love it. It's great.
It's amazing. Let's dance into music a little bit. Let's talk about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
I think generally I listen to kind of like a lot of 60s and 70s music. I guess like Stones, the Beatles, that kind of stuff. And my dad was quite a blues head, so he listened to a lot of things like B.B. King Chuck Berry was obviously one of his favorites, and still is. He's still alive. So, present tense, not past tense. Stuff like George Thorogood and the Destroyers, like lots of very heavy guitar, heavy blues music, I guess, was kind of one of my dad's things. He was also into kind of a lot of like Cajun and sort of like quite a diverse mix of, I guess, world folk music. I suppose is a way to describe it, I guess. Anyway, that's kind of my earliest memories is that kind of music. But I think one thing that did strike a chord with me was kind of like the heavier guitar music, surprisingly. Things like George Thorogood had like a really dirty slide guitar sound that was very, well, very heavily distorted, at least relatively back then. And I remember just thinking, wow, that's a wild sound. I love that. And I guess indirectly, that sort of thing kind of, I guess, set me on my path to discovering heavy rock music when I got older.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What would have been that first band that was your first love?
It's kind of a difficult one. I mean, my first musical love was probably Michael Jackson. Don't know if you're allowed to say that anymore.
Yeah.
But when I was 8 years old, I remember I got the Bad album and it blew my mind. And then when I was sort of more like 10, 11, I got into The Prodigy.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of, and things like The Orb and SL2 and like lots of like the early 90s kind of rave and electronic music. I really got into that for a brief period. But it was, but then I think when I was about 12, 13, I heard Guns N' Roses. And then that basically got me right back into the guitar again.
Mm-hmm.
And the Use Your Illusion albums, and then went my way back. And I was like a diehard, like 12, 13 year old fan. I loved Guns N' Roses, you know, knew virtually every song inside out. Well, to sing, I couldn't play it back then. And then I guess then from that, I guess I discovered Metallica, then basically became obsessed with them, bought all their records for the Black Album back. Then I remember Load came out and I was a bit brokenhearted.
Where's my band?
Yeah. And then I guess obviously from Metallica, then that set me off on the whole metal path. So obviously discovering Megadeth, Slayer, Pantera, all bands in that world. Then the new metal revolution kicked in. I loved that. Yeah, I loved Korn, Deftones. Then I discovered Dream Theater when I was sort of a bit older. And then that's when I got into prog.
Hmm.
And then I guess it all snowballed from there, really. Funny enough, because an obvious band to talk about is Meshuggah. When I was a teenager, when I was about 16, somebody gave me the Nun EP, one of their really early EPs. And I remember listening to it and not quite getting it. And I remember just giving it a good go, because CDs back then, you didn't have much choice. So if you had a CD, you may as well put the time in.
It's a commitment.
Exactly. And then, then I kind of lost track of them. I didn't get back into them until Catch 33, which was quite a lot later. And then I realized that I'd missed out on so many great albums. And yeah, I guess that's a brief introduction to bands that I loved when I was.
I love it. I love it. And I totally didn't get Meshuggah either. I saw them open for Tool here in Montreal.
Amazing.
Back in the day. I can't remember what year it was. It was probably 2000, early 2000s. And I did not understand them. They were touring Chaosphere, which has subsequently become one of my favorite albums. But but I did not understand what the hell was going on. And I just wanted to hear Tool, you know? But I've grown.
And how could I miss out Tool as well? Like, there's the Enema album. I remember getting into that, and Lateralis, and they were game changers as well. Like, amazing bands. Yeah.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream, and in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Let's talk about playing shows, something that we sadly can't do right now, but take me back to the first show that you went and witnessed, the first show that you ever saw.
The first show that I have in proper memory was when I was probably about 12, I think. My dad took me to see Chuck Berry.
Really?
A place called the Clapham Grand, which is a smallish venue in South London. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Like, I mean, Chuck then, he was like in his 70s then, and like he was still ripping it, and he was still doing the duck walk and just going for it. It just blew my mind. Like, and that definitely was the beginning to getting hooked on live music. I think the first like show I went to with friends was, I saw Green Day.
Really?
Brixton Academy in 95. No, it wasn't Green Day. I saw The Offspring.
Yeah.
Same year. In 95, Yeah, so in fact, that year I saw The Offspring, and I saw Metallica as well. Basically, 95. Yeah, 95 was the year that I started going to gigs properly and got completely. And I went to Donington 95, which was like, oh man, it was like Corrosion of Conformity, Slayer, Metallica, Machine Head on the Burn My Eyes album.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, that's probably one of my most memorable gigs of my life. It's literally a White Zombie. About five or six of the bands that I loved at the time when I was 15, and I saw them all in one bill.
Insane. How about your very first time on stage? Do you remember that?
Yes, I think definitely a school concert. Can't remember which came first, but there are two in particular I remember. There was one where I played in like a funk and blues band, which was kind of good fun. And then there was one where me and a few mates tried to play some Metallica covers at a school concert, and we sucked so badly. Like, we were terrible. And I remember we played For Whom the Bell Tolls, Enter Sandman, and Nothing Else Matters. And, yeah, it was terrible. And I remember we played and we sucked. And then we were really, really upset afterwards. And, yeah, we went off. I think we were about 15 at the time. And we packed up our equipment and went off and drank a beer each, because that's what we could have at 15, to drown our sorrows. And then we promised we'd practice and get better. I don't know if that band didn't get any better.
Oh, boy. Let's talk about how you've been filling the void. I'm lucky that I have the podcast, something that I can do while the whole entertainment industry crumbles and we can't tour, we can't get out there, we can't get that feeling, that amazing hair on the arm, raising experience of performing and connecting with an audience. I know that you're very, very busy with your being a publicist. You have your whole tight PR company. Is that how you've been filling the void?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's been ticking along as it would do normally. I mean, I guess when all this kicked off, one worry was that the work would dry up there. But in fact, it's been kind of the opposite, because bands have got nothing else to do other than release music now. So there's been, in fact, for the second half of 2020, I think it was probably one of the biggest years or biggest periods for releases ever. Mm-hmm. Like not just for us, but for across the board, so many releases came out. So yeah, I've been keeping busy with that. But also Tesseract's been kind of busy behind the scenes. We've recorded a live stream, which we're going to put out next Saturday, which when this goes out, will have gone out.
So. Exactly. Yes. We're talking about this in the past tense, but
So
portals.
We did a live stream. Portals. Yeah. And I don't know how honest some bands are with this stuff, but we've been straight up and said we've recorded it and we're going to put it out.
Good for you guys. No. Yeah. Because I would just freak out with the technical issues. If there anything goes wrong, I would feel horrible. People having paid, and it would just drive me crazy.
Yeah, exactly. There's the basic technical issues of making sure the stream actually functions properly, but then there's also we've basically gone for a pretty elaborate light show. We've got like a laser show.
Very cool.
There's a screen at the back, and there are like cinematic elements brought in as well. Like there's some axes and like it's basically almost like a gig movie kind of thing. So yeah, there'd been no way we could have pulled it off actually live, but we did perform live. Although I say we performed live three times. So I'm sure, well, actually, I probably shouldn't say this. I'm sure we took the best takes.
How was it? Was it nice to be back in the same room, at least with the boys, and playing together again?
Yeah, it was super nice. It was really nice. Sadly, our drummer couldn't make it, because our drummer lives in Austin, Texas. So,
that's true. Yeah, the drummer of Monuments.
Yes, yeah, so the drummer of Monuments filled in, and Mike. And he absolutely nailed it. Like, I'm amazed he learned nearly 2 hours of music in a month. Like, he's crazy, crazy kid.
That's awesome.
That's taken up some of our time. We've also been slowly chipping away at a new record as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes, I definitely wanted to talk about the live stream and name portals and doing something different, like with the cinematic aspects you guys have added to it. It has to be something special if you're going to do something like this now. You can't just play in a room anymore. Behemoth nailed it. They did such a sick live stream.
Yeah.
I'm sure your guys is going to be great as well. Was great. This is complicated to talk about. I knew it was going to be like this. But yeah, to take me to the whole creation of this, what you guys put into it, what your mindset was when creating a live stream, and why you waited until now to do it.
Well, I guess I'll answer the last one first. I guess we waited this long because we never really intended to do it. I suppose it was when the pandemic kicked off and everyone was putting out live streams. So we're like, oh yeah, we're still going to have a quiet year this year. Let's see what happens. And then as this has just gone on and on and on, and loads of bands have done it, we've thought, well, actually, maybe this is something we should do, not only as a potential slight revenue stream, but also just to do something cool. Why don't we try and do something really wacky and crazy, and that's not just trying to recreate a gig in someone's living room.
Mm-hmm.
And Amos, the bassist, has been the real driver on this. He was kind of the producer for the project and like co-director. And so he basically pulled the whole thing together. But basically what it is, it's a concert that's broken up into five kind of acts. So various songs are grouped together to basically tell a story. And the story basically goes through lots of the, it kind of hints at lots of the concepts from the record. And it basically draws from those, and but it's also quite abstract as well. It's not like an obvious narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But if anyone's geeky enough to have looked into what the album concepts are all about, they should click with them and they'll get it. And if not, then people might just enjoy this kind of surreal journey that this particular character takes through it, and how that ties into the album. Yeah, it's come out pretty well, I think. I hope people like it. Maybe they did like it. We don't know.
I'm sure they're going to love it. I wanted to talk a little bit about djent, the genre, you guys being packaged into that. I'm not necessarily on board with that. I think you guys are more than just a djent band. What is your opinion on this, the djent style, and the multitude of bands that have, basically stemmed from their love of Meshuggah?
Yeah, well, it's quite funny you mention this, actually, because obviously this is an ongoing conversation that we end up having. And I dipped into a djent 2020 playlist the other day, just because at work somebody was talking about it. I only knew like two of the bands. There were like hundreds of bands in there that I didn't even know about. And considering I work in the industry, I was kind of disappointed in myself. I was like, well, who the hell are all these men? But yeah, it's an interesting one. It's like, I guess we were a band before that word was popularized. And I remember, I mean, basically, very clever marketing from Periphery. They kind of really popularized it and got everyone talking about it. And hats off to them. They've been really smart, and they've done it in a really fun way as well. Like, they're a very fun band, very fun characters. And they basically kind of created this, I say genre, I mean, it's kind of, I suppose it kind of is, lots of bands do sound quite similar, but it's, I think what they have created is like kind of a community of like loads of bands, at least from like the first wave that we were part of. There's, Us, Monuments, Periphery, Chimp Spanner, and then, Sky Harbor and all these bands. We've kind of all been sort of lumped together, but I guess we also kind of knew each other from chatting online anyway, and it's just kind of a nice umbrella term for like that early community.
Hmm.
But now, obviously, as I've discovered, well, I mean, I was aware there are more bands, and there are more bands, but there are a silly amount now. It's something that's spawned into something much, much bigger. And I guess that's kind of cool. It's really nice to have been a part of that. And I think, well, obviously, Meshuggah are completely to blame for all of this. But
I agree. Is there moments where you go and you listen to these tracks and you're like, damn it, they stole that idea. I could have done that. There goes that next song. let's talk about a Tesseract craft beer. Have you guys made one? I stumbled across one from Grimm called Tesseract. Is that actually your collab, or is it just a brew called Tesseract?
No, it's just a brew called Tesseract, although I think it's made with Polaris hops, actually, which I think is a weird
very. Have you ever thought of doing a collab brew for Tesseract?
Funny enough, well, yeah, we've talked about it. The biggest problem is nobody in the band can decide what, because I'm kind of like a beer slut. I drink it all. I'm a fan of every kind of beer, apart from... Yeah, I'm not a fan of beer with bacon in it and things like that.
Weird adjuncts, yeah.
Yeah. But so I'll go along with everything. But I know Moss is very into kind of sort of Belgian style beers, like triples and quads and kind of those heavy beers. Ackle really loves kind of red ales and things. And Dan is a big fan of basically traditional British ales, like the traditional IPA and bitters and that kind of thing. And Jay, I think, because he's in the States, has become very accustomed to lots of IPA. And basically, we can't between us really decide what kind of beer we would have. But I guess we're going to have to, because we're actually talking to, funny enough, Northern Monk.
Really?
That's
very cool.
That's the reason why I'm doing about doing a beer. So hopefully we'll have a beer at some point, maybe next year. But I can't tell you what it is because we can't decide between us.
Well, that's a good problem to have. You could do a whole mix case. Mm. The Tesseract.
That's how you do it for us.
The Tesseract pack. I love it. I think it's a good idea.
I think what would be quite nice is, I don't know, nobody's really done like a Belgian sour, like a Gers kind of beer. I think that would be quite good. But I don't know how easy that is to do, because other than like the traditional Belgian ones, I've never really been that impressed by more modern breweries' attempts at them. But then, I'm not an expert. I'm just...
you enjoy it. You enjoy them. And let's wrap this up with one last question. It probably never happens to you, even though you do enjoy brews. You seem to be very put together, and you know your limits, but every once in a while it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Oh dear. To be fair, I guess I don't really have a hangover cure, but I have like a pre-hangover management. So if I'm drinking a lot, I try to maintain matching it with water. Mm-hmm. I don't always do this.
We always seem to have good intentions to do that.
But actually, one of the most effective things is that there's a... In fact, I learned this off somebody on the road in the States. May have even been Donnie Hill, actually. But there's this stuff called Pedialyte. Mm-hmm. That you get over the counter in the States. It's like an electrolyte booster thing. Mm-hmm. Have a good chug of that before you go to bed. Then in the morning, have some of that. And then make sure you eat some breakfast that soaks it up. That kind of works. But yeah, I don't know. Generally, I don't think there is any real cure for a hangover. I think when you're hungover, it's your punishment. Deal with it. Get on with the day.
Suck it up. I love it. James, thank you so much for taking the time talking to me about your life, music, and craft beer. I've had a blast. Nice. And I'm a huge fan, and I'm going to be a fan for a long time. And I really appreciate hanging out with you for a moment. Cheers.
Yeah, likewise. Cheers. And it's quite a compliment coming from you. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. What an epic chat with James. Just awesome to hook up with people that I'm a huge fan of, actually. I've been following the band for quite some time, as I mentioned during the interview. It's always very, very cool to just make an instant connection with someone. I say this a lot, but it's absolutely true. There's something special to look up to someone, to listen to their music, and then when you finally sit down and have a chat with them, share a brew, you can see yourself becoming friends. And that was absolutely the case with James. Super stoked to see you in the future and to share a brew in real life right after this apocalypse. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should absolutely subscribe to it on the podcast platform of your choice. But not only that, you should take the time to rate it and write a review, because if you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops podcast. Vox and Hops is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming at you this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey you, did you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.